DW Spotlight on Europe.
That's right. This is Spotlight on Europe, bringing you the big stories here in Europe, but from an African perspective. From our studios here in Bonn, Germany, you'll be with me, Jin Nyingi. Coming up, jihadi brides and the children of Islamic State, thousands of young Muslims who fled their countries to join IS, especially women and children, find themselves in refugee camps uncertain of their ability to return to their home countries. Latvian lawmakers want to soften gun control.
It happens already now. We take the youth with us to hunting and we train them. So I think that the laws need to be adapted so that it all happens legally and it is under control.
Also on the show, as Boeing 737 MAX is grounded, where does that leave European airlines and air travelers? And Warsaw's liberal mayor signs a declaration in support of LGBT rights in Poland.
Polish politicians look for monsters, and for them, monsters now are homo monsters. I think politicians manipulate society just for strengthening fear of the other.
Stick around for these stories and much more right here on Spotlight on Europe. By most accounts, the Islamic State is now in its final death throes. Of the thousands of young Muslims who fled their home countries to join IS at its height, many, particularly women and young children, now find themselves in refugee camps, uncertain of their ability to return to their home countries. Jack Foster brings us this report, looking at how the government in the United Kingdom is dealing with the crisis.
When we talk about the propaganda put out by Islamic State over the past 5 years, we tend to think about graphic videos either threatening or depicting beheadings and executions.
Only an imbecile would dare to wage war against a land where the law of Allah reigns supreme.
But that's only a part of the story. In fact, IS released a whole raft of high production value videos aimed at winning over new recruits in the West.
My name is Yusuf and I'm 10 years old. 2 years ago, I migrated from America, the land of Kufr, to the Islamic State.
But Islamic State propaganda wasn't solely comprised of threats towards the West. It also released numerous videos promoting nation-building, social services, and, as in this video from 2015, the dubious promise of world-class health facilities, where a man with an Australian accent, supposedly a doctor, praises state-of-the-art healthcare facilities in Islamic State territory.
I saw this as part of my jihad for Islam, to help the Muslim ummah in the area that I could, which was the medical field. It's a good system that they're running here. Everything lived up to my expectations completely.
And it's these kinds of propaganda videos distributed online which are held up as the main inspiration for thousands of people who travelled from their home countries to fight alongside IS. People like Shamima Begum, who, aged 15, left her home in East London to join the terror organisation 4 years ago.
The way they showed how you can go, they'll take care of you, you can have your own family there, you can do anything. You're living under Islamic law. I didn't know what I was getting into when I left, and I just was hoping that maybe me, for the sake of me and my child, they let me come back.
Last month, it emerged that she was living in a refugee camp in Syria and wanted to come home to the UK to give birth to her baby. But the UK Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, refused her re-entry into the UK and stripped her of her UK citizenship. And the grounds on which Shamima Begum was stripped of her citizenship relied on the highly contested assumption that she was also a citizen of Bangladesh, something which the Bangladeshi government says is not the case. Since then, though, Shamima Begum's three-week-old baby, Jara, has died of pneumonia in the Syrian refugee camp in which she was born. Critics of the UK government's stance have been quick to argue a clear and tragic cause and effect of the Home Secretary's decision in February to strip the 19-year-old of her UK citizenship, but also the government's refusal to take responsibility for the child, whom the Home Secretary has confirmed was a UK citizen, even though his mother is not. Nadim Hori is director of Human Rights Watch's Terrorism and Counterterrorism Programme, and I asked him if he believed the dilemma faced by governments like that of the UK is as complex as it seems.
What is really missing here is, frankly, political will, because when you break it down per country, like if you take the UK, for instance, and see the number of British children who are now in northern Syria, we're talking in the low dozens. You know, I think the first point is to remember when it comes to these children is that no child is responsible for the crimes of their parents.
The story of Shamima Begum has been very high profile inside the UK, and her three-week-old baby died last week of pneumonia. Is it fair to say that that death is a direct consequence of the UK government's decision to strip the boy's mother of her UK citizenship?
Look, I don't know what's fair. I think the beginning point is there's a tragedy, and the tragedy of the death of this baby has actually been too common in the Al-Hol camp, where a lot of these foreign women and their children, but also Syrian and Iraqis, have been transferred. I was visiting these camps 3 weeks ago, and when I was there, we had already counted more than 70 deaths of babies who died either of malnutrition, of hypothermia, of basically cold, or of treatable diseases like the pneumonia infection that you were talking about.
And when Jeremy Hunt, the Foreign Secretary in the UK, says that going into these camps to bring out these children is logistically difficult and dangerous, do you buy that?
I don't buy that at all. I've been able to visit these camps every 3 months. Other countries have managed to get their citizens out. The U.S. has offered up, just to give you an example, in January, Kazakhstan took back more than 50 of its national men, women and children. If Kazakhstan can do it, the U.K. can do it.
Nadim Hori, director of Human Rights Watch's Terrorism and Counterterrorism Programme, speaking to me from Paris. And I should say that we did ask the UK Foreign Office for a comment, but they declined to provide one. The exact position of the UK with regards to children who are British nationals returning from ISIS-controlled Syria is unclear, to say the least. And the case of Shamima Begum has only added to that confusion. What little we do know comes from what the Foreign Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, said on a BBC talk show last week, that the government is considering the issue, but in the case of Shamima Begum's baby, there were too many potential risks. And, quote, it wasn't possible. Jack Foster, DW.
This is a Spotlight on Europe, coming to you from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. Boeing 737 MAX 8, the newest version of its best-selling airliner, was supposed to boost the company's fortunes, but it's turned into Boeing's biggest headache. Last weekend, a MAX 8 operated by Ethiopian Airlines crashed shortly after takeoff, killing everybody on board. Alex Macheras is an aviation industry analyst based in Spain. DW's Keith Walker spoke to him and began by asking him why the black box flight recorders have been taken to France.
Well, ultimately, Ethiopians had a choice where to send the black box, and there was speculation that they were either going to send to Germany, France, to the UK in London, or perhaps to the US. Now, they have sent it to France because France do deal with a lot of air crash investigations. Of course, they have the BEA there, who are able to really extract data professionally. And it also ensures that there is no political interference, for example, that is often associated with African countries, specifically when it comes to investigating. So I think it's very responsible that Ethiopia have selected France in a bid to ensure that they get a very genuine, very thorough investigation and data extraction from the black box.
Now, Europe was probably one of the first blocks to ground the plane, to declare that this plane is not flying over European airspace.
Exactly. Europe were the first major bloc, and in fact, the first major group of countries to ban this aircraft. And the reason why this is really unusual and unprecedented is because we would never normally see the country authorities or trade blocs such as Europe authorities have to take it into their own hands to ban an aircraft. It would come from the manufacturer and from the FAA. But countries around the world, including EU member states, were not satisfied that they had seen evidence to prove that this aircraft is still safe and that it's in no way linked to the previous 737 MAX crash, which was just a few months ago, the Lion Air crash in Indonesia. Now, failing any real evidence and reassurance from Boeing in that immediate aftermath, it left countries around the world basically with jitters and lack of confidence in this aircraft type, which is operated all across the globe. And so while China were first, followed by other countries, Europe were the largest and first major group of countries to collectively ban the 737 MAX 8 and the larger variant, the Boeing 737 MAX 9.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at the actual individual airlines, because Norwegian Airlines said that it was looking at possibly pursuing reimbursement from Boeing for the lost business. And if other carriers follow suit, this could cost Boeing a lot.
Exactly. This could prove to be very costly for Boeing, because this is really going to affect and hurt the financials and the bottom line of airlines such as Norwegian in Europe, who are trying to operate in a fiercely competitive market, and ultimately they are not the most financially sound carrier. So something like this could have real dangerous capacity for an airline just trying to operate in a very vastly crowded route network such as Europe.
Sure. And one final question. What about passengers who are scheduled to fly on a MAX 8? Well, you know, what's happening? Is there huge backlogs? Are they being put onto other types of airplanes?
Passengers who are scheduled to fly the MAX 8 across the world and specifically in Europe are being reallocated onto other aircraft. There are some wet leasing arrangements, but mostly airlines are able to kind of merge flights and to ensure that passengers are reallocated elsewhere. The disruption so far is minimal because airlines are quite proactive in moving passengers across to other flights. But passengers should be clear that this is all for their safety. And ultimately, I think the overwhelming feeling is that is relief, to be honest, here in Europe, that passengers do not have to worry about boarding a 737 MAX yet, because they are grounded pending a very necessary investigation.
Alex Machera speaking to DW's Keith Walker. This is Spotlight on Europe, coming to you from our studios here in Bonn, Germany, with me, Jin Nyingi. Latvia is about to introduce the European Union Directive on Firearms. It's a rule which, among others, sets a tighter gun control in Europe after it suffered a number of terrorist attacks in recent years. Though Latvia has been lagging behind in adapting the EU regulation, the country's lawmakers are in fact keen to soften their own national laws on the use of firearms. They want to allow 16-year-olds to use shotguns in hunting. But as Gades Adiosis reports from Riga, there are many who oppose the idea.
It's a Saturday morning in the beginning of March in the outskirts of Riga. A handful of people have taken positions in a snowy field surrounded by pine trees. They have their eyes fixed on orange discs made of clay, propelled into air by a special machine.
Up!
That's 16-year-old Ralfs Ivanos. He tells his shooting instructor to throw the so-called clay pigeon. He aims his shotgun, pulls the trigger, and boom, the flying object disintegrates in the air. A few moments later, it starts all over again.
Die.
Ivanov says that he began training in clay target shooting with his father.
It just happened once that my father offered me to come here and to shoot. I refused it several times, but then I changed my mind. Why don't I come here? It was something interesting, something new to try, and now I have been shooting here for the past 6 months. Yeah.
Target shooting is a relaxing activity, says Ivanos, and he wants to improve his marksmanship for shooting competitions. But that's not his only motivation. Ivanos has recently begun hunting with his father, too.
I've participated in hunting as a beater 3 times already. I'm starting to realize how the whole process works. I also learn, for instance, which animals I'm allowed to shoot and which ones are off limits.
Though Ivanos is able to participate in the hunting, he has to reach 18 years old to be allowed shooting with a firearm. Among other requirements, he must get a police permit to keep a hunt rifle. He also needs to pass an exam to get a hunter's license. But non-governmental organizations uniting hunters in the country want to lower the age when youths can actually use the shotguns in hunting. Haralds Barviks is the head of the Latvian Hunting Association, an NGO campaigning for hunters' rights. Barviks says that youth should be allowed to fire shotguns in hunting from the age of 16.
The hunters think that 16-year-olds should be allowed to shoot, because those are traditions which run in their families. That's what the parents and grandparents teach to their sons and grandsons. And it's necessary so that we can continue the traditions.
According to Barviks, there are other European countries like Finland, Sweden and Germany, where youth below 18 are allowed to hunt with rifles. Besides, he says, the law needs to be changed to reflect the actual situation in Latvia.
It happens already now. We take the youth with us to hunting and we train them. So I think that the laws need to be adapted so that it all happens legally and it is under control.
Sēdien traģiski beigušās kādas medības Rucavas novada Dunikas pagastā.
But that's not what Astrīda Notte believes. Her NGO advocates for the preservation of Latvian wildlife. She says hunters cannot reasonably explain why Latvia's firearms legislation needs to be urgently changed.
The fact is that a teenager will have to make a decision to kill, and it will be a decision they make for themselves. Is it really necessary to arouse the passion for killing before he or she turns 18? We have a law saying that an adult is from the age of 18. It's a mature personality. Is the psyche of a teenager mature enough to make a decision about an act of killing?
There are others who share her concerns. Elita Krūmiņa is Latvia's Auditor General. Her office inspected the Youth Guard military movement. It helps develop leadership and strengthen regional identity in young Latvians. Krūmiņa is afraid the firearms proposal might endanger their safety.
We saw substantial problems in the Youth Guard after our audit. While there is supervision, what we saw is that instructors are insufficiently trained and that there are problems with the shooting instructions for kids.
Juris Rantsāns, who is in charge of the parliamentary committee pushing through the bill, says that is not a valid argument.
Of course, we are speaking about a very small part of the society. But just to forbid their rights because somebody is being emotional and thinks that it's wrong? Well, we can't do that either. There has to be a balanced decision.
Rantsāns says that his parliamentary committee has not bowed to pressure from any lobbying group. The hunters have simply had stronger arguments. That's why he's supporting the change. Meanwhile, Astrīda Notte says if the parliament ignores the warning bells, then it's up to the president to decide whether to veto the bill. Jādars Ģēlzis, DW, Riga.
Let's now head to Poland, where the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people have become a frontline issue in the run-up to the country's parliamentary elections later this year. The Liberal mayor of Warsaw has signed a declaration in support of LGBT rights, and a popular openly gay politician has founded a new socially progressive party, which is gaining the backing of some young Poles. The ruling Nationalist Party has lambed these initiatives. Until now, even mainstream opposition politicians have been reluctant to consider issues such as same-sex partnerships for fear of upsetting the powerful Roman Catholic Church. But as Julian Berner reports, the tide appears to be turning.
Late last month, Warsaw's popular mayor and liberal opposition politician Rafał Trzaskowski signed what many see as a trailblazing declaration. In it, he pledges to work to protect the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people, to promote school education about sexual minorities and to sponsor gay pride events. In each Warsaw school, a social worker is to be introduced to promote tolerance and to intervene in cases of abuse of gays and lesbians. Warsaw should be a free and open city, Trzaskowski declared, in a clear reference to a moral majority crusade by the current right-wing government. He didn't need to wait long for an all-out attack from the ruling party's leader, Jarosław Kaczyński, who thus addressed the pre-election convention last weekend.
Nasi przeciwnicy
Our opponents are attacking the family. They are attacking children. The more you read this declaration, the more your hair stands on end. Polish parents have the right to bring up their children the way they feel is right for them. We won't give in. We will protect the Polish family.
But not everyone in Poland agrees with him. Last month, this sketchy song inaugurated the launch of a new liberal political movement, which is called Wiosna, or Spring. Its founder is Robert Biedroń, who was the first Polish politician to come out as gay. He also proudly attends public functions with his boyfriend. Biedroń has a lot of street credibility among the younger generation. He feels Poland needs an alternative to a political scene where the left wing is practically absent and controversial social issues are at best avoided by mainstream parties.
When you go on the streets of Warsaw, you will see that Warsaw is ready for more changes concerning LGBT rights, more progressive human rights than now. When you discuss mainly young people, people say, we don't understand why we cannot have registered partnerships. Even though we are dominated by Catholics, Polish people want to be free. They want to share the similar values concerning the tolerance and human rights like the Western society.
At this high school prom in Warsaw last month, a group of 18-year-olds proved that Biedroń knows what he's talking about. Instead of asking their girlfriends to the traditional formal opening dance, the Polonaise, all the straight boys marched holding hands with their male best friends. This girl explains in a prom video, which has gone viral on the web, why she danced with another girl. She says, "We love and support our gay friends who are forced to hide their sexual orientation. We have enough of a society which accepts only those it wishes to accept." But some lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people aren't so sure that Poland's conservative establishment will give up that easily. Artist and gay rights activist Jacek Kietliński is worried that during this year's election campaign, people like him will once again become the targets of right-wing politicians.
Polish politicians look for monsters, and for them, monsters now are homo monsters. I think politicians manipulate society and just for strengthening fear of the other. And the politicians want to create a fear of the internal enemy, especially the one who is not in closet.
However successfully the ruling right-wing party manages to mobilize its conservative electorate, one thing is clear. Given the growing grassroots support for progressive social causes, opposition parties can no longer afford to ignore or pay lip service to the younger generation's yearning for a more tolerant and open society. Julian Berner, DW, Warsaw.
Thanks for that, Julian. Now, with just 2 weeks to go before Britain's departure from the European Union on March 29th, British Prime Minister Theresa May is preparing to push her lawmakers to vote again on the EU divorce deal, which they have already rejected twice. On Wednesday, the British Parliament also rejected the prospect of leaving the European Union without a deal. Sarah Stefan has more in this European News Roundup.
European Council President Donald Tusk said on Thursday he would ask EU heads of state and government to be open to granting the UK a long extension of Brexit talks if the UK needs time to rethink its strategy of leaving the EU. The proposal on Thursday's vote is to extend the deadline until the end of June. For most in the European Union, European Parliament elections between May 23rd and May 26th are the last possible exit point for the UK. If the UK were to remain in the EU after the election date, they would legally have to take part in the elections. After lawmakers voted to reject leaving the European Union without a deal on Wednesday, British Prime Minister Theresa May reiterated,
"The options before us are the same as they always have been. We could leave with the deal which this government has negotiated over the past 2 years. We could leave with the deal we have negotiated but subject to a second referendum. But that would risk no Brexit at all. damaging the fragile trust between the British public and the members of this House. We could seek to negotiate a different deal. However, the EU has been clear that the deal on the table is indeed the only deal available.
The US Federal Aviation Administration joined the European Union, Canada, China and other countries in suspending Boeing 737 MAX 8 and 9 flights. The MAX model is now banned from flying in most countries across the world following an Ethiopian Airlines crash on Sunday. It's the same type of aircraft that crashed 5 months ago in Indonesia. More than 370 MAX aircraft are in service around the world, with nearly 5,000 on order. U.S. manufacturer Boeing maintained its planes were safe to fly, but supported the quote-unquote proactive suspension of the MAX fleet. More than 100 threatening emails using Nazi terminology have been sent to prominent politicians and state institutions across Germany in recent weeks, German media reported. The emails threatened to bomb banks, railway stations and state institutions throughout Germany. Among the threats were two made earlier this week against a train station in the northern city of Lübeck and a finance office in the western city of Gelsenkirchen. The buildings had been evacuated, but no bombs were found. An oil slick is heading towards the French coastline after an Italian cargo ship sank on Tuesday. The sheet of oil, 10 kilometers or 6 miles long and 1 kilometer wide, could hit parts of the French coast near the port city of Bordeaux this weekend. French authorities have said the ship was transporting 45 containers of quote-unquote dangerous materials and over 2,000 tons of heavy fuel. The cargo ship was on its way from Hamburg to Casablanca in Morocco when a fire broke out late on Sunday. All 27 people on board were rescued. The European Parliament has voted to formally suspend EU accession talks with Turkey, citing severe political and democratic backsliding under President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. On top of the severe human rights violations, the dismantling of the rule of law, and the fact that Turkey holds the world record for the number of journalists in jail, the recently amended constitution consolidates Erdogan's authoritarianism, Kati Piri, a Dutch lawmaker who sponsored the non-binding resolution, told the plenary. EU governments have the final say in any suspension. Turkey's 15-year EU accession bid has long been stalled, even before Turkey's severe crackdown on dissent in the wake of the failed coup attempt in 2016. In a statement, the Turkish Foreign Ministry rejected the European Parliament vote. Air pollution causes almost 800,000 premature deaths every year in Europe and close to 9 million worldwide, according to a study by German scientists. Pollution shortens the average life expectancy of Europeans by about 2 years. Between 40 and 80% of those excess deaths are caused by heart attacks, strokes, and other types of cardiovascular disease, underestimated up to now as a driver of smog-related mortality, they found.
Sarah Stefan there with that roundup of European news. African beauty. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of Spotlight on Europe. We'd love to hear your feedback. Head on to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and drop us a line. My name is Jane Nyinge, and on behalf of the whole crew here in Bonn, Germany, thank you so much for your time.
Every time I look into your eyes, your beauty make me shine. But no one Latin, no, baby. Oh, you only money, oh, baby. I go love you past my mama, past my baba. I go love you past my uncle, past my sister, oh. Bebe mi, yo, Luba. Bebe mi, yo, Bebe mi, yo.
bikangenderera omutima gukubirira nchuse omwana ntwaliriza.